This is Christoph Kisun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity, where we explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. Last week, guest James Pascali and I discussed the topics individuality or intersectionality in social activism and allyship, a process, not a destination. You can catch our conversation at kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity. This week, we are shifting focus and introducing KISU-FM's newest program, Sustainable Idaho. Host Julie Raymond and Chris Brown, doctoral students in political science at Idaho State, join us in the studio to navigate the topic, sustainability and diversity. Hi, Chris. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Fabulous.
Awesome. It's great to be here.
Very excited to have you guys here, kind of piloting your new show, Wrapped in Mind. Really
yes.
Exciting. So I think a really good place to start would be just to familiarize the audience with you guys. So let's start with Julie. Julie,
okay.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Iowa.
And you have been at Idaho State how long now?
Since 2011.
And you're currently working on your doctorate in political
yes.
science.
Uh-huh.
And I also know you have a lot of research in issues of climate change. You've been to many conferences. You
yes.
want to tell us about that a little?
Sure. I've attended 5 global climate change conferences. So UNF's CCC hosts the Conference of Parties every year and has done since 1992. So I've been attending since COP21, which was in Paris, where the big Paris Agreement was signed.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Julie, how did you get interested in sustainability?
Well, I've never been someone who was comfortable with the way that we are utilizing the planet's resources.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a young student. I'm middle-aged. And I remember when the issues of Earth Day and things like that were coming to the forefront of society. I remember that the environment was an issue in the 70s. And so I'm really dating myself here. But that experience is important because it helps shape my concerns. And what I've seen is that we have another generation coming up that will have fewer chances in life, fewer chances to be healthy, to have a thriving economy, a social balance, than it was when I was a kid. And I feel like handing that over as a heritage to the next generation is a poor bargain for them. And that it's my responsibility and my desire to make that transition successful so that they at least have the same chances that we've had to have a good life. And not just them, but also the wildlife and the trees and the environment we live in, which contributes so enormously to what it means to be human.
It's we're tied. We're bound up with the earth inextricably.
I mean, do you really not want to go to the ocean, you know, the forest? We are so gifted in Idaho with so much public land. And we can go out and take a walk and camp, and you don't ever see another person. And that is so rare on this planet.
I love that both Chris and you are non-traditional students, and I think that makes you kind of the perfect candidates to run this program because you can bring a very intergenerational lens. You've seen this happen since you were younger than I am and how it's steadily deteriorated over time, and it's really cool that you guys are here trying to be that bridge between the planet you knew and the planet that's coming.
Yeah.
And try and, like, find a happy medium.
I think the thing is my generation thought that it was something that was coming. And for your generation, it's something that's here. And for the and it's never going to go away. Its impacts are not going to be off the agenda ever in the lifetime of anyone that's alive from now on. And so it's something that's going to have to be dealt with one way or another. I mean, yes, you can abdicate responsibility for it and just continue going 5 miles down for our energy, or we can put out solar panels as one solution and draw some of our energy from the sun and not pollute the air constantly.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
So I'm from Montana, Dillon, just up the road from Pocatello.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first school with first town with a college if you go up I-15. My interaction with sustainability really came from my love for public lands in Montana. Very similar to anybody in Idaho. Montana has great public lands, just the same. What I study that is really related to sustainability in my own studies in my doctoral program is I study a lot with technology and policies and politics around how we think about technology. So in terms of sustainability, a lot of the culprits of sustainability problems are technology, your fossil fuels, those kind of things. the kind of technologies of the past. And I don't view a lot of people, the way a lot of people do, that technology is a bad thing, that we need to be more primitivist in our approach to how we become more sustainable and how we fight climate change. I don't think you're going to get anybody's support from that. And I don't think it's really necessary. I think we can move forward and use technology in a different way, make different technology decisions, and have better outcomes for the environment and for sustainability going forward. And it's really about making that choice rather than just being down in the dumps about everything and being very kind of negative about it. I think we have a lot of opportunities.
Technology has saved humanity so many times before. Technology is why we have population exploding all over the planet because of the engineering of food and GMOs and all of that stuff. You can feed a lot more people now than you could have before with the same resources and the same land. So I agree with you. I think we are kind of in a time where people see technology as the enemy of sustainability, but it's just about redirecting the focus. It's all about how we use technology. How long have you been in Idaho State, Chris?
I came in fall of 17.
Okay.
So I'm going into my fourth year, which is my last year as well.
Very excited, very excited. We have like 3 doctoral students in this room, y'all, in physical science. And that is dope. So tell me a little bit about the Sustainability Podcast. How did this come to be?
So the show's called Sustainable Idaho, and it's going to air every Tuesday at 7:35 in the morning, so a perfect drive time. And it should be about 7 minutes long, so it's a perfect kind of commute, listen to in your car kind of length for a show. But I think we're really going to be hitting on some interesting topics that are important for Idaho and for Pocatello, but are also some things people maybe don't know about or may not know enough about.
How did you guys get the positions of being hosts?
Oh, we had to apply. So you have an application, interviews, and then there's a private decision-making process with the supporters or the people driving the program.
Tell me about your sponsors. Who's funding the program?
The Portneuf Research Council is part of that. And also the Sustainability Club is also part of our guideship. You know, getting something established is hard work. And you have to have the people committed to it that are really passionate about it. And Linda Engel is definitely, she's a professor here on campus and also one of the faculty that are guiding this program. And she's definitely been there to keep it on track and moving forward.
So the show airs on Tuesdays at 7:35 a.m. What is your intention for this show?
Well, my intention is that there's a lot happening in Idaho. We don't really hear about it so much because, unfortunately, the topic, although it's a scientific topic and a social topic, is a political topic in a way that makes it confrontational sometimes or hard to discuss. And so I think that it will be interesting for people to hear just how much is really happening here and that even in Idaho, there's broad concern about this problem and solutions.
So just to share a little bit of what we're going to be covering, as an example, one of the first shows is going to be on a simulation created by MIT called En-ROADS that simulates different changes and choices we can make and their impact on things like sea level and CO2 in the environment. So it's going to be things like that that really educate people and really show people at a very basic level what we can do and what is being done about sustainability with a focus on local and state issues.
I like that, bringing sustainability back to Idaho. Yeah, because I agree. I think a lot of people in this neck of the woods, they don't think of it as our problem. They think of sustainability as an urban problem or an international problem. And they're like, well, we're in Idaho. We're fine. We have public land everywhere. It's like, well, that's exactly why you should care about sustainability.
Well, I mean, even farmers here are seeing climate impacts on their.
So I hope everybody tunes in to Sustainable Idaho Tuesday morning, 7:35 a.m.
Yeah.
Julie and Chris, I mean, I've known you guys for years.
Yes.
We've had classes. We've been in groups.
Yeah.
We've always had a good time. So I'm very happy and confident. And I know you guys are going to do a phenomenal job with this show.
Thank you so much.
Your vote of support is very much needed.
Thank you. Well, this is Navigating Diversity after all. So let's throw some diversity in this conversation.
Okey-doke. We're game.
I guess my first question would be, when you hear the words sustainability and diversity, what do you think?
I think sustainability, the ability to reproduce your society in a different way, basically to invent new solutions to the way your life ways, is an economic statement. It means that you have the financial capacity, the financial instruments at your disposal to invent new ways of being, and that this is cognitive imaginary process that a society goes through. And as Chris mentioned earlier, it's also a way for societies to design themselves in a new way. But this means that you have the ability to do that. And globally, unfortunately, the people who have produced the least impact on climate are also the ones suffering the most.
Right.
And so because you have to have those financial instruments in place, that social structure, I mean, that's one of the things we are so lucky about in this part of the world is that our structures are strong and they support and largely protect individuals that are part of their societies. But if you are not a part of a society like that, you are exposed to the elements constantly, to the changes in weather patterns, to the changes in temperature. And your asphalt on your streets melts and your shoes get stuck to it. Or you can find yourself sleeping in refrigerated grocery stores at night because
it's too hot
to go home. And there are things, you know, happening to try and manage that. So like the global economy is trying to find ways. That's one of the things that's happening at the Conference of Parties is that the governments are trying to come together and find ways to implement changes in the global economy. One of those things is, I know this is a scary word, but a carbon tax, which basically acknowledges that we don't have all the solutions, do we, right now? Our economies are, in a certain way, dependent on things that we know are harmful to us. And also carbon offsets. These are ways for us to say, we can't fix that now, but we want to help those societies we want to bring along with us because we all need to transform our ways of being. So in the West, it's a process of redevelopment. And in less developed countries, it's a process of development. And it isn't just development for them. It's a major leap forward. They have to do a lot more work to get the education in place that's necessary to support a society that can handle these changes. And it's expensive. And so those carbon offsets and those carbon taxes can be used to fund that.
So it's really about allocating funds to those societies that are struggling the most from what the rest of the world is doing to the planet.
Yeah. We didn't know when we started this kind of an economy, but we know now.
Because it's a competition.
Yeah.
It's economies competing against each other.
Yeah, economies are competing, yeah.
And they're not competing for human life or even for environmental protection, right? They're competing for money.
The impacts on human life are important when they become part of the international conversation. So like usually it's when conditions have gotten so bad that media attention or in some way it's noticed and then it's on the table and discussed.
If you're just joining us, this is Christoph Kassoun and you're listening to Navigating Diversity. We're here in the studio with Julie Raymond and Chris Brown, hosts of KISU-FM's newest program, Sustainable Idaho. We're discussing the topic, sustainability and diversity. Chris, what about you? What do you think of diversity and sustainability?
So when brought together, I think everything that Julie said is absolutely correct. But to add to that, I think it's important to keep in mind that different groups and different peoples are going to have different sustainability needs. So when it comes to things like culture or long-term practices, a lot of the states we're talking about are what we would call developing states, meaning that they're kind of going on the same path we are of industrializing, and they're starting to become now some of the biggest polluters when we think about countries like India or China that have massive populations and massive industrial bases are now are looking at countries like the United States that are now looking back and saying, well, you shouldn't be doing that and kind of having a little bit of a, well, that's not really fair. Why were you allowed to do it but not us? So I think going forward, we have to keep in mind that as we, on the international level, invest in developing nations to kind of help them guide towards a sustainable future, to help them kind of skip that step, which is really difficult, I think. The other thing is that when we think about more domestic issues, different groups, whether it be the inner city or the tribes here in Idaho, on the average, everyone has a different conception of what they need for a sustainable future. And that has to fit with things like cultural beliefs, especially when we're thinking about groups like the Native American tribes who are very close to these issues but have specific cultural needs that are separate from kind of everyday society, which I think is important as well.
We kind of need to interpret sustainability in the culture that we're trying to produce it. We can't keep rubber stamping our version of sustainability or what we value as sustainable onto the rest of the world. That just, it will never work. That's how we ended up here in the first place.
We excluded a lot of people in the last step to get here. So we have to make sure that we create a sustainable future for everyone and not just white sustainability or something like that.
I want to mention too that the Paris Agreement fully acknowledges that, that countries need to create their own frameworks, mm-hmm. and that's what the INDCs are about, or nationally determined contributions are about. They design their own way, and it's a reporting process that's supposed to be entirely transparent so that other countries can say, because there may be a lack of trust between nations when it comes to reporting, so it's supposed to be totally transparent so that any country can say, okay, that's what they're doing, that's fair, that means that if I do this, it won't hurt my country and won't put us at a disadvantage. It really is going to require a lot of integrity between nations. Mm-hmm.
Transparency, mm-hmm. accountability, yeah. the honor code. Because time's running out.
Well, yeah. The time to change, the times when we can actually impact the outcome is fastly approaching, yeah.
The window's closing. What do you guys think the impact of COVID-19 on sustainability has been?
One of the things that showed optically to everyone, like as an illustration globally, is that wow, if we don't drive our cars, there really are, we can see the mountains and the air is clearer. You know, many cities, you saw things that nobody had seen in decades, ranges of mountains. So definitely in terms of that. And also, doesn't it sort of show like really how linked we are, like how interdependent we are for health and for our economies and everything? I don't know, Chris, what have you seen?
I think one of the things that's really interesting about COVID that gave me hope was people coming together and kind of seeing it as a community and a national or international threat that needed to be combated through cooperation. I feel like in the last month or so, we've kind of slid away from that as the numbers have declined in the overall sense. Mm-hmm. But I think that we have a lot of groundwork there to say, hey, remember when COVID happened? That's kind of like what climate change is. We have to work together and everybody has to kind of pull their own weight to make this work. I think COVID has had good impacts on some things in a short-term sense, but I do worry that we're not going to take the lessons from COVID and actually apply them. We're just going to kind of go back to business as usual.
Right. We'll kind of forget. Institutional memory does not last very long. No, it is.
And it really highlighted how much stuff can be done without driving somewhere. I think one of the best jokes I've heard is that COVID illustrated how many meetings could have been emails.
Right.
And I hope we learn that lesson and we continue with that lesson going forward, that in-person isn't always better, but is essential.
Yeah, but it also showed us how much we miss each other. We can do our jobs at home, and that works really great for a lot of people. And it also is a savings for businesses themselves. You know, your employees can be productive at home, even mm-hmm. if the dog barks in the background or a baby cries. Business can get done. And at the same time, it says, wow, we really miss, we are a tribal society. It's like we have our self-constructed tribes of friends and family, and we need each other.
Desperately, like the mental health
aspect.
Yes,
mental health.
It's kicking in a lot for a lot of people.
There's also like this quality of problem solving. Like I'm interested in cognitive adaptivity and how we do that in society, our plasticity. And you can really see how we problem solve. I mean, if you want to get together with your friends and you can't, then you go on Zoom and you get your friends together in your PJs and a drink and you have, you know, a little party. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not the same, but we adapt.
We adapt.
Yeah. And so even these problems, these serious global problems we're talking about, you know, we can adapt.
But I really like how you talked about within a few weeks of human beings relaxing and just giving a little the planet 2 minutes to just exist without us walking all over it, you know, and ripping it up every 2 minutes. It had a massive impact. It was mind-blowing. Like, water was running clear in cities and air pollution was down and animals were swimming and walking in the towns. And it was just like the meek really shall inherit the earth.
Yeah.
So I think for me, when I think of sustainability and diversity, I think a lot of cultures. Being a Caribbean person, I grew up as a descendant of indentured Indians. Mm-hmm. And indentured Indians were pretty much brought from India to the Caribbean to replace enslaved African labor after emancipation. The crazy part is what I learned in the Caribbean was a lot of people who've been through a lot of oppression, we've had to survive for so long across generations that we had no choice but to be sustainable. Sustainability wasn't this cute, sexy thing that we have to adopt now to save the planet. Sustainability was, this is how I feed my child tomorrow or they will die. A lot of the food in the Caribbean we eat, a lot of our cuisine is scraps and parts of animals that Massa and the colonizer didn't want. We have things like cow heel soup and chicken foot and eating all different types of wild meat. And my people found ways to take all that gross food that colonizers didn't want and make it into sustainable, good, flavorful food that's nourishing and healthy. And it's funny now because all these tourists come back to my island to eat what? Our food, Sili food. So it's just very interesting to me how we always kind of come back full circle. You talked about Native Americans, Chris. Native Americans and indigenous peoples all over the world have always been sustainable. They never stayed in one place for too long. If you bore a hole in the forest, you stay there for a certain amount of time and then you moved on so that space could reclaim itself, cover up, and then you bore another hole and you keep going. That type of sustainability. So I think there's a lot to be learned from people of color and other cultures in this conversation.
Yeah, I think that there's things to be learned, for sure. Ways of doing things, ways of gardening, ways of producing food.
So kind of going back to the idea of, well, we just can't keep rubber stamping. We have to figure out sustainability and what that means for all different types of people on the planet. Mm-hmm. And I think the way each of us individually handles it, there's something to be learned to add to the bigger picture.
That's the perfect way to sum it up, is that everybody's got a role to play, everybody has something to contribute, and everybody should be involved. Otherwise, we just make the same mistakes of hurting each other we always have.
Over and over again. Do you think sustainability will really become a reality in the next 20, 30 years? Or do you think it's still going to be this thing that we keep pushing off?
Well, from an international perspective, mm-hmm. I think that there are definitely interests that are motivated to continue on the path we're on because, you know, there's so much money basically left in the ground. But another way to look at that is you change now while you can or you change when you have to. But either way, there will be change. Mm-hmm. And the longer, further down the road you get with fewer choices in terms of time and construction of those choices, the less desirable and less natural the changes will be. I do think that it's important to realize that some of those old technologies put us at a certain risk. And that risk isn't just degradation of our environment, it's also degradation of our economy because we're investing in resources and fuels that we will not be able to basically sell to anyone who's going toward the future. And it's technologically isolating. So, I mean, there's a reason why we aren't building wagon wheels anymore, right? At one time, that was the way to get around, you know, but then there was a train. And then there was an airplane and an automobile, you know. So things change, and it's okay. Let's just roll with it. Think about the next generation. We need to start thinking like grandparents, not like the next politician that's going to roll through.
In one way or the other, the planet's going to become more sustainable. The question's going to be how humans fit into that.
Do you think the planet has some kind of thinking mechanism and it knows what it's doing?
Yeah, you're making me think about James Lovelock's Gaia theory.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, so it's like a systems theory of the planet that everything's interconnected. And in a way, I definitely think of the planet as a giant organism. In other words, there's things just that the processes are interlinked like they are in our bodies and that if things start to go unravel, you know, eventually you have a health crisis. Well, that can happen with the planet also. So, I mean, we see it with the oil spills in the Atlantic, that it's changing the viscosity of the oceans. So that's how heavy the water is and how fast and how slow it flows and whether it warms up or stays cold in certain regions. I mean, let's face it, it was 100 degrees in the Arctic this week. I mean, I'm
it's
speechless,
happening.
Right? Yeah, it's happening. And I mean, I know it's Idaho, but we did have snow in June. More than once. So, I mean, there's something to look at here. The frame within which humans live in terms of the conditions the planet produces for us to have a good life, a life where we can plant food and have reliable seasons and all of that are pretty delicate. And we're threatening each of those thresholds pretty badly right now, sometimes exceeding. As a rational person, when you understand what the evidence means or how the conditions are changing, there's no way to look at it really and say, I don't think I need to do anything because it's human driven. It really is human driven.
Thinking of it in terms of a system has its own rules and its own way of doing things from the, you know, the atomic level all the way up to societies. All of that stuff works in its own way to interact, and everything we're doing, it has an effect on all the rest of the system. So whether or not the system is going to forever support us being able to be around in the way we are now is questionable.
Right. I just loved how you said the Earth will become sustainable regardless of us. it's going to be hard no matter what we do. The decision we get to make as human beings is how much harder we're going to make it on ourselves.
And if you think about it that way, it becomes easier to convince people. I think just telling people they're terrible for not recycling isn't useful.
No.
If you tell them about how cool the technology that would be green is and how cool sustainable technology and sustainable futures can be and how convenient they can be, I think it's really more useful to tell people about it that way than to just kind of tell people they're horrible for this behavior or they should be doing this. I don't think that's very useful.
Right. I agree with that. We need to kind of attack the policies, not the people. Those are usually what's causing the problems for most of society. Because people are just living in the world that was handed to them. Yeah, I can recycle and yeah, I can try and do all these little things. But at the end of the day, if the only grocery store in my little community only sells plastic and I'm poor and I can't go to Whole Foods, what am I supposed to do? How are they going to care about the planet if their child is dying? So I think that's also a big conversation globally, nationally, we need to address as well. We have to kind of like take care of people's basic needs for them to be able to participate in this bigger conversation.
Yeah, and there are countries that are actually changing their way of life, you know? Isn't it Sweden that doesn't have enough trash? Like they're importing other people's trash now?
Right.
So, I mean, it can be done. And it's always going to be a choice. What are we going to choose to do with the knowledge we have? That's it. That's it right now.
Is there any last things you want to leave the audience with?
Well, I want to leave the audience with hope because there is so much good going on. And really, the changes that we're making aren't that scary in Idaho because right now we aren't setting any new bars. We're revising our way of living here in some places just as a way of making life easier. Maybe you're installing solar because it reduces your utility bills, whatever. But there's good news in all of that in terms of the environment and our society and what it can do for individuals in their homes. And there's also more really interesting things that we could do. And I kind of like would like to show some of that off. You know, Idaho is a great place to live. It is because of the mountains and the rivers and the streams and the thermal energy and also because of our communities.
Yeah, hope and just kind of a thoughtfulness about how complex these really issues really are and how different human interests affect all of them and are affected by all of these environmental issues and how we have to navigate that going forward so it works out the best for all of us. I think that's something that we really want to get to on the show is what's available to us, what we can have hope about, and how we can move forward in a more positive way.
I think it's going to be a phenomenal show. Sustainable Idaho will be airing on Tuesday mornings at 7:35 a.m. So please, listeners, follow this great, great show. Thank you guys so much, Julie and Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is Christoph Kassoon, and you've been listening to Navigating Diversity. Julie Raymond and Chris Brown, hosts of KISU-FM's newest program, Sustainable Idaho, have been helping us navigate the topic, sustainability and diversity. Sustainable Idaho airs weekly on Tuesday mornings at 7:35 a.m. Join us next Tuesday for Navigating Diversity at 7:30 p.m. as we continue to navigate diversity and explore how human beings differ yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. For more information on all episodes, visit kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity.